Well, hey, happy Easter. Okay, we're glad that you guys chose to spend part of your weekend with us here at Grace. We've had all different kinds of people here this weekend. I mean, here in this building between yesterday and today. We got a bunch of different types of people here in this room, like right now. I mean, some of you guys, you consider yourself as extremely religious. And so here it is, it's Easter. You're like, okay, we could go to church. Like, that's what we do. And so you're here. All right, we're glad that you're here. Others of you, you consider yourself as not really religious at all, and you're only here to make mom happy, but you're here anyway, and so that's cool. Others of you, you consider yourself as generally a good person, while some of you guys, you view yourself as like you're kind of the rebel, like following the rules just isn't quite your thing. You're not really great at that. Others of you, you're here at church, or you're here at a church like every week, like going to church, you're really good at it. This is kind of what you do. All right, others of you, you haven't been to church in a long time, probably not since like Christmas, okay? But here you are, and you are back, and this is just what we do in our society. Some of you guys, maybe you've been considering faith, okay? Maybe you've been considering faith for a few weeks now or a few months, and you've been kind of going from church to church to church, just trying to figure out like what exactly that means. You like the idea of Jesus. Like, it sounds like a pretty good idea for you, that it would work out well for you to kind of know what that's all about. And so you're like considering, but you're just kind of not quite there yet. Others of you, you grew up with faith. Okay, at a young age, you were going to church, and your grandma took you to church, and but for you, it's just like that childhood faith that you have. It's just not really doing so well, if you want to be completely honest, in the real world. And so you're trying to figure that out. Maybe some of you guys, you even got your hand like on the doorknob and you are getting ready to like walk out of faith, or maybe you're already in the process of walking away. Before you walk away, and before you really jump into this whole Jesus thing and all that, I got one question I think you should really consider, or something that you should really at least think about, and that is Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John reliable accounts of actual events? Right? That's the question, okay? Is Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John, or John, or any of these, just one of them needs to be, is any of these reliable accounts of actual events? Because when it comes to Christianity, that's one of the main questions that really we should be asking ourselves before we jump into Christianity or before we walk away from Christianity. Because here's the deal, if they are reliable accounts of actual events, then what they say about Jesus is true. And if what they say about Jesus is true, then you should lean in, all right? You should think about some of the things that it has to say. I mean, it is something that is worth reading. You should pay attention regardless of what you believe, regardless if you already have the hand on the door or not. See, here at Grace, since Christmas, we have been exploring one of these accounts. Happens to be the book, or what we call the book of Luke. And so if you haven't been here at Grace since Christmas, guess what? You missed a lot, but that's okay. We are in the same series, okay? We're still here doing this thing. We have not made it through Luke yet. So we've been exploring one of these accounts. We've been exploring Luke. Luke, by the way, was written by a Greek doctor named Luke, who lived during the time of Jesus, but did not know Jesus personally. And so Luke, he had heard the rumors, and he heard these stories about Jesus, and this Jesus guy is doing all this incredible, incredible stuff. And so what Luke decides to do is he decides to go and spend months and months and months, if not years of his life, to investigate and to track down the eyewitnesses and to sit down with them and to have the conversations and to ask them the tough questions. And once he is done, he compiles it all down into one orderly document. And that, by the way, is the book of Luke that we all have in our Bibles. And when Luke is writing this, the thing I want us to all to understand is that Luke, he's not writing religious literature. Okay, that's not what he's doing. He's not writing this thing. He's like, man, someday I hope this makes it into the Bible. That'd be sweet, you know? He's not doing anything like that. What Luke is doing is he is simply documenting the life of a man. And it happens to be a man who claimed to be God, and it was a man who everybody agrees changed the world. And he tells us that right at the beginning of his document. We see this in Luke chapter 1. This is the first word of the first verse of the first chapter of Luke. This is how Luke decides to start this document or to start this account. Okay, he doesn't start with like, in a galaxy far, far away, or hey, here's this fairy tale, or once upon a time. He doesn't start that way. He starts off by saying many people have undertaken to compile a narrative about the events that have been fulfilled among us. He's like, I'm not the only ones doing this. I mean, he tells us this straight up. He's like, a bunch of people, so many people have decided to go out and to do what I am doing, investigate the claims of this Jesus guy and to investigate the stories and these rumors to see whether they are actually true and to talk with the eyewitnesses and to compile it all down and to write it down into an orderly document. He's saying, I'm not the only one. Many people have done that. And many people have tried to do that. And he says, we've done this, he says, about the events that have happened, he says, among us, right? This isn't something that happened like, 200 years ago. He's like, I heard about this Jesus guy, and he's kind of embellishing on some of the stories about Jesus just to make it like cooler and better, all right? That's not what he's doing, all right? He's saying, no, this happened in my lifetime. All right, this happened around me. Like I was around for this type of thing, just as the original eyewitnesses and servants of the word handed them down to us. He says, for me, it just also seemed like a good idea. He says, it seemed good to me. Since I have carefully investigated, right? It's not like he's writing another Bible story that you could tell your kids at night so they could go to sleep. Like, hey, Jesus loves you. And they're like, oh, really, me? Okay, I could sleep tight at night. Like, that's not what he's doing. He's documenting historical events. That's Luke's purpose. That's what he's trying to do. And he thinks it's a good idea since he has carefully investigated everything from the very first. He says, so that's why I'm writing to you an orderly sequence. And so here's Luke, all right, this guy. He's not saying suck it up and have faith and you'll be all right. No, he's giving us an event to anchor our faith to. And so far in our story that we've looked at over the last, I think it's like 17 weeks, Jesus, we've watched Jesus, he's launched his movement, he's gathered some followers around him, he's doing his thing. He has spent at this point up to like 2 years traveling from town to town to town and village to village to village, and he's teaching people, his main goal is teaching people what God is actually like. And he's helping people out, he's healing people, and as you can imagine, word spreads like wildfire, and the crowds upon crowds upon crowds, they all want to come and see him, because Jesus is doing things that nobody has ever seen any other man do before, and he's saying things that nobody has ever heard anybody else say before. And so crowds of people are coming from everywhere, the entire region, to come here and to come see this Jesus guy. In fact, we've talked about here at Grace how in Mark's account of Jesus' life, Mark tells us that it actually kind of starts working against him, all the crowds and stuff, because Jesus, at some point, he can't even walk into a town openly because there's so many crowds. And so Jesus, he has to stay out in the outskirts, and he has to stay out in the countryside, and people from all the towns and villages and cities are coming from all around to hear what he has to say, and the crowds are just so, so big. In fact, one day, Luke tells us in Luke chapter 15, he says, all the tax collectors and the sinners were approaching to listen to him. All right? Now, for us, we're like, okay, what's a tax collector? Like, is that just one of those, like, is that like an IRS agent that nobody likes? And by the way, okay, if you work for the IRS, we here at Grace, we love you, okay, because we have to. But really, we just want you to get saved and leave us alone. Okay, that's what we want. All right? These guys aren't like IRS agents, kind of how we would view this, collecting money for our own government. These guys worked for the oppressive foreign government. That's who they worked for. They worked for the enemy, which at this point in time, to these Jewish people, this is Rome, okay? Rome owned the world at this point in history. And so these tax collectors are considered traitors by their own people, the Jewish people, and they were hated by them. And so these are the types of people that came to listen to Jesus. It's kind of interesting. It's kind of the opposite of how we think when we think of like Jesus and church and religion and just kind of all that stuff, because people who were nothing like Jesus actually liked Jesus. And Jesus, guess what? Liked him back. And these are the types of people that flocked to Jesus. On this day, this wasn't the only group of people. There's actually another group of people. It says there are also the Pharisees and the scribes who are also there. And these people are like the ultra religious people. Okay, we know some people kind of like this. These guys are self-righteous. They're religious people. These, from society standards, I mean, these are the good people. They've never been arrested. They've never done anything wrong. They follow the rules kind of to a T. And so these people are also there and they are complaining, saying this man welcomes sinners and this man eats with them. They're talking about Jesus. Now, I want to do a quick survey real quick. And I know nobody here wants to do a survey. I understand that because it's Easter, but we're going to do one anyway. And so my question is this. All right, which way, I want you to think about this. Which way do you lean? We all lean one way or the other. Every single one of us, including myself. Do you lean more towards the self-righteous type people? Or do you lean more towards unrighteous? All right, I'll go first, just to make it fair. I would say for myself, by far, my issue is I lean more towards self-righteous. Meaning, and the way I know that is because sometimes I'll see people doing things that I don't think they should be doing, or I'll see people like believing something. I'm like, how could you do that? And that's what I'll think in my mind. Like, I don't say it out loud, but I think it. And I'm just like, man, you know, what's wrong with those people? Okay, some of you guys are with me. You've thought that before, right? When you're looking at a certain group of people, like, what's wrong with those people? How could they believe that? Or how could they act that way? Or maybe for you, it's how could they vote that way? You know, that type of thing. And for me, like, if I don't keep myself in check, that's just the way I drift, right? Any of you guys out there, we're doing a survey, remember? All right, let's get honest real quick. Any of you guys drift like me towards self-righteous? Okay, all right, imagine that, okay? There's a bunch of you guys. Imagine a church just full of self-righteous people. Can you believe it, okay? Nobody here thought that would happen, but here we are, okay? But then there's another group of people, and this is probably, if you didn't raise your hand there, and if you want to play the game, okay, this is where you probably land. This is the group where sometimes I'll invite a guy to church, and it's always a guy. It's never a woman. I don't know why that is. But I'll invite a guy to church. I'm like, hey, you should come check out Grace. And they'll say something like this. Like maybe some of you guys out there, you've said this before, where you're just like, nah-uh. If I walk in those doors, that church will catch on fire. Like, I just know it. You know, they're kind of making a joke, and I'm just like, well, we got insurance, and that would be a great check, you know? And so maybe that's what we need is a little fire around. I don't know. It's like that type of thing. And maybe that's you, where you know, you kind of look at your past and you're like, man, I've really, really, really screwed up my past. And I've had issues and I've made wrong decisions and I know that I've done that. And for you, it's not like, you know, you like know that or have heard that like God loves everybody. You're just not sure if he would accept you. And that's kind of where you're at. It's really, you're more of the, not self-righteous, it's kind of the opposite. You're more of the, like, unrighteous. Anybody, just real quick, like, raise your hand. How many of you guys maybe lean more towards the unrighteous? Okay, yeah. All right, some of you guys, you don't, you're like, just kind of put your hand up just a little bit because you don't know if anybody else is playing the game and you don't want to be the only one, okay? I respect that. But here's the deal. This crowd, filled with both types. It's filled with people just like us. You got the bad people, you got the good people. You got the messed up people, you got the super religious people. You got the people who lean more towards the unrighteous type person, you got the people who lean more towards self-righteous. And both groups have issues, and both groups are confused about what God is like. And Jesus wants to set the record straight. So, Jesus begins his talk this day by talking about losing stuff. Now, if you're like me, okay, you hate when stuff gets lost, right? Like, we all agree on that. I've never met anybody where I'm just like, hey, you know, what are you doing this weekend? And they're like, I don't know, like, nothing yet, but if I'm really lucky, like, I'll lose something really, really good, and then I can look for it all week. Like, that would be so fun. Like, nobody has ever said that. And so here's Jesus. He starts talking about losing stuff, and people are back then are just like we are today. And he starts talking about specifically how sometimes when you lose something that's generally not worth that much, like your keys or something, yet because it belongs to you, and because it's lost, sometimes it becomes a big deal to you, right? I remember a few years ago, It was a normal day. It was a trash day at my house. And so I took my trash out and I drug it out to the mailbox or, you know, by the street. And I went to work. And when I came home from work, I noticed that the trash can was gone. It was put away. And I'm like, oh, Kate, she never puts the trash away. Look, she really does love me. She did this today. So I have to drag it back to the house. This is awesome. And so I went in and I was asking her about it. And turns out that she didn't touch the trash can, which was normal. And she was like, I don't know. I haven't seen it. And I realized, I'm like, well, it's gone. Like, the trash can's gone. Like, where is it? Where'd it go? Why is it gone? And I started kind of freaking out. I'm like, where is this thing? Like, number one, this is inconvenient because for the next, and it turns out it was gone for a while, for the next 2 weeks or so, like, I got to throw the trash just in my garage. I don't want to do that. I want it in a nice, like, bin. I don't want it stinking up my place. I got stuff to do in there, you know? And number two, I'm like, how much is this going to cost me? Like, I don't own that thing. It has the, you know, that's like the trash company's thing. And in today's day and age, it's not like they're going to eat it. I'm going to have to eat it. And so I'm like, what am I going to do? Like, am I going to have to, like, negotiate with them? Like, no, I don't think it's worth $500, like you say. You know, the wheel was getting ready to fall off anyway. And so it's, like, worth less. You know, like, what am I don't know how any of this works. And it really, really bothered me because I'm like, my trash can is gone. And kind of showing my age a little bit. You know, for me and for all of us, like, adults, you know, whenever we don't have, like the answer to life's problems, you know, what do? We blame it on the kids. I don't even know what kids. I'm just like, it's probably the kids in the neighborhood, like those kids, wherever those kids are, like they must have, you know, they must have moved it. I don't know where this thing went. And so I started looking for it, like a good trash can owner should. And I was walking up and down the street. I'm like, this is like for like a couple weeks. I'm searching for this thing. And during those couple weeks, I learned like everybody's trash can routine. Like I had it all down. I was like the expert in the neighborhood. That guy keeps his there. That guy keeps his there. There's one over there. That's always there. You know, that type of thing. And I one day I'm walking down the street and one of my neighbors is like way far down the street. I noticed that they have a trash can up by their house, which is normal in their driveway. And then I turned the corner, and they had like, and this is going to sound a little creepy, but they had like a privacy fence, you know, but you could kind of see through the cracks a little bit. You know what I'm talking about? Is when walking down the sidewalk, and I noticed that they had a trash can in their backyard. And I'm like, they got two. And so one of these has to be mine. And I was trying to figure this out, and I didn't know what to do necessarily. Like, I'm not going to ask the guy, like, did you steal my thing? You know, so I called the trash company. I'm like, what do I do? I think one of my neighbors, like, stole my trash can. You know, what's, like, the scenario here? And they said, well, here's your number for your trash can. Like, every trash can's got a certain number, and this one's the one that's assigned to you. And so you need to go, like, get it. And I'm like, well, how about instead of me climbing over this guy's fence and getting it? Because I don't even know technically if it's mine, but he's got two, so it's got to be mine. And I'm like, why don't you send your trash guys out? And while they're, like, dumping the trash, they can, like, check the trash can numbers after they get past my house towards where that guy lives. And I'm like, why don't you have them do that? And if they find it, they can bring it back. And they're like, oh, that's a good idea. We'll do that. So they did that. And I was gone for work, but I had Kate perched in the window to watch because I wanted to know if that was actually it. And she was watching. And sure enough, she told me that they read the numbers and they were like making like, this is it. And they took it and they ran that thing all the way down my street to my driveway, but didn't just set it next to like the, you know, the mailbox like it normally would, because they knew that my neighbors could not be trusted anymore. And so they walked it all the way up my driveway and put it in my garage for me, so it'd be nice and safe. And I've never been so excited to see a trash can in my entire life. But think about this. Never once did I sit at my desk at work and think to myself, like, I wonder where my trash can is right now. All right? Never once in my life have I ever like woken up in the middle of the night going, where is it? I know it's close. Like it's within a square, you know, a half mile of me, but I just can't, but it's too far. I don't know where it's at and it bothers me. Never once in my life did I care until it was lost. See, the whole crowd, as they listen to Jesus start talking about lost stuff, they don't understand where Jesus is going with any of this. Like some of you guys right now with me. Okay, Jesus, he starts talking about like losing sheep. He's talking about like losing money. And then he decides to tell the crowd a story, which he did so often. This is kind of his thing. And Luke records for us the exact story that Jesus told that day. And this is what he says. He says, imagine this. Jesus is like, okay, guys, focus in. Right, imagine this. Let's say a man had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, he says, hey, dad, could you give me a share of the estate that I have coming to me? Now, when Jesus said this and when the crowd heard what this first son, what this younger son told asked his dad, both groups, the self-righteous and the unrighteous, both groups would have gasped. Both groups are like, no way, what the kid is doing. It's like the kid is waiting for his dad to die, and instead of dying, his dad just keeps getting older and older and older until the kid loses patience, and he just ends up going to his dad, and he's like, dad, I wish you were dead. All right, I'll be honest. I wish you were dead. I want my inheritance now. I wish you would die and I could get all your money, or at least the half that's owed to me, and then I could just go do whatever I want. I want your stuff now. And everybody in the crowd, when they hear this and when Jesus begins the story, they're just like, wow, that is so messed up. That is so disrespectful. Like, there is so much hate in this kid's heart for his dad. And they're all wondering, how is this dad going to respond? Like, is he going to disown him? Is he going to say something like, okay, well, you can find your own place to stay, and you can buy your own clothes and wear those. You could eat your own food. You know, is dad going to start lecturing him or disowning him or kick him out of the house, or what's he going to do? And Jesus gives a twist, and it's incredible. This is what he says. He says, so the dad distributed the assets. And everybody in the crowd, they would have been like, wait, what? Why would he do that? And the reason for this, by the way, is because this son, at least in the dad's eyes, already lost. He's already gone, and the dad wanted him back. Now, of course, he's not lost physically because they're talking to each other here in the story, but he is lost relationally. And his dad is willing to do anything to get his son back, even to let him go. And so he distributed the assets, and of course, not many days later, the younger son, he gathered together all that he had and all of his half of dad's money, and he traveled to a distant land where he squandered his estate in foolish living. He takes the money, he runs, and he runs through the money that took his dad about half of a lifetime to accumulate and to build. And after he had spent everything, Jesus says, it just so happens that a severe famine struck the land. When we think of famine, we think of like going into Aldi and all the bread and milk has already been bought. And we're like, oh no, what am I going to do? You know, well, how are we going to survive this? All right, this is legit. Okay, this is where there is no food. Okay, nobody has food. There's no food anywhere. And this guy is in big, big trouble because he had nothing. He's got nothing. And so things get so bad for this kid that this kid, I mean, this is terrible. He had to go out and get a job, okay? If you could believe it. And so he goes and he went to work for one of the citizens of that country who sent him into the fields to feed pigs. And when he would have said pigs, I mean, this is a Jewish audience here. I mean, this whole crowd, both groups of people, they're just like, oh, pigs, like you gotta be kidding me. That is terrible. I mean, that is so dirty. It's like nails on a chalkboard to them. And they said, Jesus says he longed to eat his fill from the pods that the pigs were eating, but nobody would give him anything. I mean, this whole thing, working with pigs, I mean, this was the lowest or the most shameful job, is the lowest of low in that society. Just to kind of compare it to today, this would be like me being a water boy at the University of Michigan. It would be like the lowest that you could possibly go in all of life, degrading, shameful to my family name. You understand, okay? Some of you guys do, some of you guys don't. But on top of that, this kid is starving. He's got nothing. And he hits rock bottom. Some of you guys know how that feels. Because you can look back at a certain time in your life and you've been there. And the crowd is looking at this and they're like yelling, this is justice. This is what this kid deserves. All right, this is the first time that this crowd has agreed on anything. Yeah, but they all agree. They're like, man, okay, this is good for this kid. And Jesus keeps on talking. And so he says, well, the son, he's there. And he's looking at this pig slop. And he's like, man, I'm so hungry. Like, I could eat that. And the son starts thinking to himself. He's like, whoa, wait a minute. All right, my dad's lowest servants who work on the farm at home, all right, they live a better life than what I'm living right now. And so he decides to do the unthinkable. He decides to head home, and his thinking is maybe he knows his dad's not going to bring him back. His dad's not going to say, oh, come on back like to the family. But he's thinking maybe his dad will hire him as the lowest worker that he has. And he goes and he prepares his little pathetic speech. And he says that he got up and he went to his father. But while the son was still a long way off, his father saw him. And was filled with, and everybody in the crowd, they're filling in the blank. I mean, they're like, he's probably filled with anger. Yeah, he's probably filled with disappointment. Yeah, he's probably full of resentment. And the crowd, they're all thinking the same thing. Both groups of people, they're all like, man, this is really going to be good. Right? His dad is going to set him straight because that's what they would do. And because that's what you would do. And I would do. But they didn't know what the dad was actually like. That's really the reason why Jesus came, was to show us what God was actually like. And so Jesus says, no, he wasn't filled with disappointment or anger. Jesus says he was actually filled with compassion. And the crowd's like, what? What do you mean? Compassion? Like, are you sure, Jesus? And Jesus pushes the issue and he says, so this dad, he ran. Now, back then, right, different from today, back then, no man, no dignified man would ever run. Like, that's not what men do. They'd have to, like, pull up their robes and, like, show off their legs and, like, run. Like, that was not cool, okay? That's part of the reason why I don't run that much anymore, because it's just not biblical. And so I don't. But here he is, Jesus, like, he ran. And the whole crowd, they're like, he ran? And Jesus, like, yeah. He ran, and he ran, and he threw his arms around his neck, and he started kissing him, and the whole crowd's like, oh, you gotta be, this guy's got, like, pig all over him, like, he, you know, he just got done touching the pigs, like, this, you know, working with pigs, and he kind of smells like a pig, and they're all just like, man, that's just terrible. It's not like the guy stopped off at a Motel 6 and, like, washed up or anything before he got there, and the kid starts into a little pathetic speech that he's been working on the whole way. And the dad doesn't even listen to him. In fact, the dad interrupts him. The dad, what he starts doing is he starts barking orders to, like, all the workers around. He says, hey, get my son some clothes. Hey, you, I need some shoes. Can you go get some shoes? And he says, cut up the steaks because we're eating meat tonight, boys. And he's all excited. He's like, we are going to party and we are going to celebrate because his dad says, this son of mine was dead. And now he is alive again. And he was lost. And now he is found. And so they began to celebrate. And I'm guessing, I don't know this for sure because the Bible doesn't tell us, but I bet that maybe the people in the crowd start to understand the story, both groups. I think the non-religious people in the crowd, these are the people who lean more towards the unrighteous way of doing things, all right? These people are just like, whoa, whoa, Jesus, wait a minute. Are you saying that God wants a relationship with someone like me? And I think the self-righteous people, these are the religious people in the crowd, they're like, whoa, whoa, Jesus, are you saying that God desires a relationship with those people? Right? Like, after all they've done, are you saying that's what God wants? See, sometimes, just from my experience, this is what I've noticed, is that sometimes it feels like it's easier for the messed up people to get right with God. You know why? Because your life sucks and it's broke and you know it, right? See, it's the religious people that have the most trouble. Some of you guys, you know that's true, right? It's the religious people that have the most trouble because you don't think you need him because you think you got it yourself. Jesus continues. He says, now, his older son, everybody in the crowd is like, oh yeah, what about that guy? All right? He says, his older son, this son, I mean, he's the firstborn, he's well-behaved, he is a rule follower. Some of you guys are, this is you. He says, now his older son was in the field, and as he came near the house, he heard the music and the dancing and the partying, and he starts asking some questions. So he calls over one of the workers, he's like, what is going on here? And he finds out that his little brother is back, and he finds out that his dad welcomed him with open arms after all that he's done, and this really bothers the older son. In fact, he becomes angry, and he didn't want to go into the party. He didn't want to spend time with any of them. He didn't want to spend time even with his dad, all right? So his father, he came out of the party, and he started pleading with him. See, here's the deal with both sons, right? And both types of people. Both sons are running from dad in their own way. Both of these guys have a broken relationship with their dad, and both of them are using their dad to get what they want. They're just using different tactics. This one's following the rules to get dad's stuff. And so the dad comes out, and he starts pleading with them. I mean, he starts begging him. He's like, please, come into the party. And the older son, he doesn't want anything of it. He looks at his dad, and he's like, look, dad, I have been slaving many years for you. And I've never disobeyed your orders. In which case, if you're a parent in here, you're going, yeah, right, okay? He says, yet you never gave me a goat so that I could celebrate with my friends. I had to reread that last part. I'm like, did he just say goat? Like, I understand boat. But, you know, here he says goat, like he wanted a goat. He says, but when this son of yours came, he says, he has devoured your assets with prostitutes. You know what he spent all your money on, dad? All your money that you've been working on your entire life, you know what he spent that on? On prostitutes. Did you know that? And you slaughtered the fattened calf for him, meaning you cut up the best steaks and you're giving it to him. You're partying with him. And the dad looks at his older son and he says, son, you are always with me, and everything that I have is yours. Like, all the rest of my stuff, all right, when I die, you get. But we had to celebrate, and we had to rejoice because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again, and he was lost. But now he's found. See, it's not that the brother was bad and now he's good again. Woohoo! All right? It's that the brother was lost and now he's found. See, Jesus is trying to get the crowd to see what God is like. He views people as lost and found, not as good as bad. Good and bad, that's how we view people. Is that a good person or a bad person? Jesus is like, no. I view people as either lost or found, and that's it. Meaning when he sees you wrecking your life and rejecting him and running from him, whether you run from him through rebellion or if you run from him through religion and following the rules, it's all the same to him. See, he saw you from a long way off, just like in the story, and he didn't just run to you. He came all the way down here to the dirt for you, and he told people for 33 years what he was actually like, and then we, as a people, killed him. And he paid your penalty for your sin and for my sin. And whether you're religious or non-religious, or whether you consider yourself a really good person or a bad person, or whether you are lean more towards self-righteous or unrighteous, he died for you. And he didn't stay dead. Also, he could offer you the option to have a real relationship with him. See, it's not about behavior. See, behavior, that's what religion is. See, so many people, they think it's all about religion. Did I do the correct religious stuff? It's not about religion. Jesus hated religion. Jesus was constantly butting heads with religious people. That's one of the things why he came here. It's like, it's not about religion. It's not about following a bunch of rules of do's and don'ts that somehow you get to die someday and you get to appease God and he will look at us and say, wow, you did so much cool religious stuff. I should let you into heaven. Like, that's how we view, that's what religion is. That scenario does not happen. Jesus came for the opportunity to fix a broken relationship. And too many of us, we're like the older brother, and we act like everything is good, but on the inside, the relationship is just not there. But God is presenting us with the opportunity for a relationship. It's a choice. Think of it as this. Think of it as like a proposal, okay? Okay? I don't know much about proposals. I did it once. And it worked, okay? So I'm at least 100% at the moment. And so let's say this. Let's say I proposed to somebody. Let's say we've been dating for a while. Things have been going really good, at least in my opinion, things have been going really good. And so let's say I decide one day we go to Cleveland and we're downtown and we go to a really nice restaurant and everything is good. We're having good conversation and everything. And I'm like, man, this might be it. And then we walk along the lakefront. And when everything is right, you got the moon out and the lighting's right. And the weather is just like perfect. And you're just like, this is it. This is time. And let's say I had a ring and I got down on one knee in front of them and I said, hey, all right, or in front of her, there'd be only one. All right, let's say in front of her, and I'm like, hey, I love you. Like, I care about you. I want to spend the rest of my life with you. I want to marry you. Would you please marry me? And I had the ring, and I had it out, and she has a decision to make, right? Like, that's how it works. And there's really kind of three options that she could say. Number one, she could say, yes, right? Oh my goodness, yeah, yes, you know, like however that goes. She could say, yeah, I want to do this. And what happens if she says yes, right? She starts crying, the family comes running out of the cracks, you know, and everybody starts taking pictures of everything, and it's just this joyous thing. And then you guys start planning a wedding, and it's actually not you guys, it's actually her and her mom start planning the wedding, but that's okay, and that's good. And so what happens? Then eventually, a few months later, you get married, and you guys vow to love each other for the rest of your life and, you know, make this promise to each other that you'll never leave each other and take care of each other in sickness and health and just all this stuff, and you live happily ever after, okay? At least that's what we, you know, that's what we think or that's what we dream of, okay? But she doesn't always say yes, okay? Let's say you get down on one knee, okay? It's all perfect, same scenario, all right? Lighting, set, camera, action, everything's good. And you get down and you're like, I love you. I want to spend the rest of my life with you. I desperately want a relationship with you like forever. And here's this ring. Would you please marry me? And she looks at me and she's just like, I'm flattered, but no, okay? Not interested in that. I actually don't see us ever getting married. And so, sorry, you know, about that. What would happen? Okay, number one, it'd be extremely awkward. It would be painful, I'm assuming, right? It would be hurtful, and it would probably take me a bunch of counseling to, like, get, like, over that. I don't know how long it would take. But eventually, think about it, eventually, we would both move on. Like, that's what happens, right? And so, she could say no. All right, I think there's another option that I think a lot of people, especially when it comes to our relationship with God and choosing to have a relationship with him or not, that I think a lot of people choose, and it's this. Let's say I get down, all right, third time. All right, I get down, and everything's perfect, and the lighting's perfect, and the moon's out, and I'm like, oh, man, this is it. And I say, hey, I love you. I want to spend the rest of my life with you. All right, please marry me. Would you marry me? And she looks at me, and she's like, I don't know. Okay, I'm surprised, okay? But I'm not 100% sure. Like, can I just say maybe? All right, maybe. And that would be awkward too, because it'd be like, okay, I jumped the gun a little bit on this, and she needs to think about it. And so I would probably try to figure out, like, okay, let's schedule a date. And next week, like, let's do dinner again. I'll bring my resume. All right, we could start talking, like, the pros and cons about what it would be like to actually be married to me. And you need more information, and you could decide what you want to do. How about that? Okay? And so those are really kind of the three options. You got yes, you got no, or you kind of got maybe. But here's the thing about maybe. This is what I want you to understand. The thing about maybe is that at some point, maybe becomes a no. It just does. All right, think about it. Like, in this scenario, if she died, like if she got hit by a train the next day or something and died, not that I would wish that upon her, but if that happened, it would be a no. After saying maybe, like that, it just reverts to no. Like it didn't happen, and so it's a no, okay? See, maybe never defaults to yes. It never does. It always defaults to no. And so some of you here today, here's the deal, honest truth, okay? You are a maybe with Jesus. And maybe you've been maybe with Jesus. You've been a maybe with Jesus for a long time, and you're here, and you're trying to fix your life, and you got some things, and you're like, I'm trying to figure this whole, like, Jesus thing out, and then you're like, here you are, Zach, like, you're standing on stage, and you're telling me that Jesus is on his knee in front of me, and he's already got the ring out, and I must decide now, and you're kind of in a panic right now, and I'm like, yeah, you kind of do, because you got to either tell him yes, or no, or sure, I guess technically you could say maybe, but at some point you have to decide, because maybe turns to no. See, if you say yes to a relationship with Jesus, here's the thing I can promise you. Your life will get better. Not that your problems will go away. He doesn't promise that. Never has. Right? But he will be there that you can, I mean, you get a relationship with your creator. I mean, this is the relationship that you were actually created to have. I mean, it's a huge thing. And he is there and he wants you and he is the perfect dad and he will set you free and your relationship will be restored. It will be what it was supposed to be and you will no longer be lost to him. And if you say no, that's fair, but you don't get him. Or what he has to offer. You just don't. All right? You don't get the honeymoon without committing to the ring. And if you say maybe, that's okay, I guess. But don't let yourself sit there very long, because it always defaults to no. And so the question that you really have to wrestle with, whether you're getting ready to walk out of faith and you got your hand on the doorknob, or if you're getting ready to jump into this whole Jesus thing, the question you have to like wrestle down and figure out is Luke a reliable account of actual events? Because if Luke truly investigated, and if Luke truly tracked down the eyewitnesses and had the conversations with them and asked them the tough questions, and if these truly are Jesus's words, and if Jesus really did tell this story to show us what God was actually like, then you should lean in, and you should pay attention, and you should focus in, and you should read it, because it changes everything. And so maybe here and you're considering faith, maybe you're getting ready to walk out on faith, maybe, I'm just saying, I don't know what you know, I don't know what you believe, but maybe you never knew what God was actually like. And I don't know how you view God, but this version of Jesus sounds pretty good to me. And this was Jesus's version of God. And it's a version of God where God desperately wants a relationship with you. Whether you lean more towards unrighteous, whether you lean more towards self-righteous, whether you view yourself as non-religious and you don't know much stuff about God, or you view yourself as a complete rule follower. We're all in the same boat. We're not born with a relationship with Jesus. It doesn't work that way. It's a decision that each and every one of us have to make. And I want to give everybody the opportunity here today on our last of five Easter services to make that decision for yourself. And so real quick, we don't do this very much, but if everybody would just close their eyes and just think about this for a second, all right? It's not about saying a certain amount of words. It's not about, doing a bunch of lists of do's and don'ts that you somehow got to do to somehow appease God. It's not about any of that, all right? It's not about your behavior, all right? It's about choosing to have a relationship with him. And so here's my question for you. Can you remember a time where you made the actual decision to give your life over to Jesus, right? And to start that relationship with him. Like, think back to that moment. Does it exist? Is it there? And I feel like there's a lot of people out there where you're just like, I don't know, like, I believe that God is real. Like, I believe in God. Okay, well, believing in God is good. Sure, it's the foundation, but there's a big difference between I believe in a God than I have given my life over to God and I have a relationship with him. Those are two very different things. And so here's my challenge. If you don't know 100%, I'm not saying you're sitting out there, you feel comfortable with 90%. Who wants to live 90% sure? Not me. But if you aren't 100% sure that at some point that you have given your life to Jesus, and really, again, the main question is, if you can't remember actually doing it, how are you so sure that you actually did it? If you can't remember a moment, why don't you just do that right now just to make sure? And I'm going to pray real quick, and you could pray something along these words. Again, it's not these specific words. It's just communicating with him in this kind of way. And you don't have to say this out loud. All right, he knows your every thought. I just think it. Just pray to him. That's what praying is. Just talking with your true dad. And I encourage you, if you don't know 100%, talk to him and say something like this. Dear God, thank you for coming to rescue me. I know that 2,000 years ago you came down and you wrapped yourself in a human body, and you lived for 33 years or so, and you were perfect, and we ended up putting you to death. And on that cross, like, I don't understand it all. Like, I don't have all the questions answered that I have, but I know that, I believe that somehow when you died on that cross for me, that somehow some of it applied to me. And I thank you for that. And I know that it costs you something. And God, I want to begin that relationship with you today. Not tomorrow. I want to do that right now. I want that relationship that I've been longing for maybe my entire life with my true dad, who for some reason, I don't even understand it, but loves me more than I could ever understand. And I thank you. That's it. You can look up here again. That's it. That's all it is. Again, it's not, it's like you got to jump through a bunch of hoops or anything like that. Thank goodness. It's just us going before God, our Father, and saying, I want that relationship with you. And so if you did that today, I'm just throwing this out. We were trying to figure out like a good way to do this. But if you did that today, or maybe you're trying to figuring out if you should do that, if you haven't done that, do that during this next song. Like, don't listen to the next song. Just take care of that. But if you do that, I would just say, go ahead and text, if you would, text yes, Tiff, in all one word. Doesn't matter if it's capital or not, capitalized or whatever, it doesn't matter, to 97000. If you text that to 97000, it at least lets us know, and we'll send you some stuff, and you can opt out or whatever if you don't want anything. But well, at least what we want to do is we want to send you just a small little book. Okay, that's it. But hopefully just to kind of answer any questions that you might have. It's good. So if you would text that, that'd be awesome. If you don't want to do that, at least tell the person that invited you, okay, to come over here and check out Grace. It's the most important decision you could ever make in your entire life. All right, let's pray. God, we thank you for these words, and we thank you for saving us. You didn't have to. You didn't owe it to us. We didn't earn it in any way, but you did, and we thank you so much for that. God, we ask that you would help us. If there's anybody out there that hasn't began that relationship with you, we ask that they would do that today, that they would throw away the no, that they would not say maybe, that they would say yes to you. It's the most important thing we could ever do. It's the greatest relationship we could ever have in our entire life, a relationship with our Creator. I mean, it's awesome. And God, we need you. And we thank you for being the loving dad to people like us. We're all rebels here. Lord, we thank you for everything. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.